Peter delivered from prison. April 25th period Acts 12 5-17 period, the angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him, and delivereth them. Psalm 34 7. Following the history of the early church, we now come upon another period of persecution. The former persecution seems to have passed by the principal ones of the church entirely. It manifested itself against ordinary believers rather than against the apostles and public ministers. The result, as we have seen, was the spread of the gospel by those who were scattered abroad everywhere. The persecution now considered was directed against the apostles. Both persecutions were from the adversary and his faithful, but were such only as God saw best to permit, and such as would work out some good in connection with his plan. During the reign of the Roman Emperor Caligula, the Jews were kept in a considerable ferment by reason of his repeated attempt to have his statue set up in the temple, with altars for the worship of himself. While the Jews were so busy in defending their own religious liberties, the infant Christian church was left comparatively unmolested. But now Caligula was dead, and a very different personage was his successor, and the Jews, having a respite from troubles of their own, had good opportunity to cultivate their animosity against the followers of the Nazarene. King Herod Agrippa, having been obliged to cooperate with the emperor's plans, had made himself more or less obnoxious to his subjects, the Jews, and he now sought to conciliate them by persecuting the Christians. This Herod Agrippa was a worthy successor to his uncle, who had murdered John the Baptist, and to his grandfather, Herod the Great, who murdered the infants at Bethlehem. His first object was personal aggrandizement, and the perpetuation of his own family in the kingdom. His public acts, on the one hand, were intended to continue him in favor with the emperor at Rome, and on the other hand, to gain as much favor as possible from the people whom he ruled as king, as representative of the emperor. The persecution began with the killing of the apostle James. Seeing that thereby he gained the favor of the Jews, Herod thought it the cheapest method by which to regain popularity with his subjects, and proceeded to take Peter also. What a sad blow this must have been to the early church! James and Peter were apparently the principal leaders in the affairs of the church at Jerusalem, as they too with John, the brother of James, were the most prominent amongst the apostles, while our Lord lived. We can imagine the consternation James already did, Peter seized and imprisoned, and his execution held over merely because it was the week of Passover, and because according to Jewish custom no one could be put to death during that week. The manifest, if not declared, intention of Herod was that Peter should be killed in some manner immediately after the close of the Passover week. Here we pause to notice a strange commingling of religious formalism with the spirit of murder. The spirit of murder was in Herod and in the Jews, yet both for the time restrained themselves in order to symbolize by the Passover ceremonial a cleansing of the heart and life, a purification toward God. There is a lesson here, for all who will take it, to be on guard, lest the outward and formal observances be an utter contradiction of the real condition of the heart. While obedience to the Lord in outward observances is eminently proper, it is still more important that the thoughts be pure and good. By this time the number of Christians in Jerusalem was evidently considerable, notwithstanding the number that had emigrated on account of persecution, and it does not at all surprise us that we are informed that these everywhere were praying to God on Peter's behalf. There were evidently no church buildings in use by the Christians. Up to this time, they gathered in convenient places, and quite probably there were several of these in Jerusalem. The earnestness of these prayers is evidenced by the fact that they were kept up all night, and evidently for the entire week of Peter's imprisonment, for he was not delivered until the very last night, and, when delivered, it was sometime in the fourth watch, which began at 3 o'clock in the morning, and he was knocking at the gate of Mary's home, where prayer was being made, before sunrise. Verse 13. We cannot know just why the Lord permitted the death of James and spared the life of Peter, yet, doubtless, both events exercised a beneficial influence upon the church. Possibly, indeed, there may have been growing in the church a lack of appreciation of these apostles, whom the Lord had so highly honored as his mouthpieces and channels for blessing the church. The martyrdom of one would cause his loss to be seriously realized, the imprisonment of the other would, and did draw forth the sympathy, love, and appreciation of the whole company, and after they had prayed so earnestly for his deliverance, we may be sure that Peter was more than ever beloved by the Lord's flock. At all events, the death of one and the sparing of the other we may be sure we're parts of the all things that work together for good to those who loved the Lord. Meantime, Peter had been delivered to four quaternions of soldiers, i.e., four relief guards of four soldiers each. Two of these watched in the outer courts of the prison, while two of them were chained to Peter in a cell. Thus, seemingly, every precaution had been taken against his escape. He had been delivered once before from the prison into which he had been thrust by the Sanhedrin, but now he was under military guard, probably in the Tower of Antonio, and chained to soldiers, who knew that under Roman usage his escape would mean their death. The entire week had been spent in prayer on his behalf, yet the Lord had not delivered him, and each day seemed to add to the earnestness of the prayers and to the necessity for the deliverance. Yet knowing the circumstance, it was difficult to judge in which way the Lord's providence would be interposed on Peter's behalf, if at all. Since the Lord had seen best to permit the death of James, they must have reasoned that they could not be at all certain that Peter would be delivered from death. How great and how far-reaching were the blessings of that week of trial, and of prayer, of drawing near to the Lord, and of realization of complete dependence upon Him, we may surmise. The Lord was pleased in His providence to spare Peter to the church, but He was also evidently pleased to be inquired of by the church on this subject. However, even on the last night of his imprisonment, though he expected that the next morning Herod would call for him to deliver him up to death, notwithstanding all this, Peter slept. His noble, courageous heart was fixed upon the Lord. He trusted in divine wisdom, and divine power, and divine love, and was assured that nothing would be permitted to happen that would not be in some manner overruled for good. Hence, committing his all to the Lord, he was able to rest sweetly in sleep. Here was the appropriate order of things, the one directly involved so sweetly resting in the Lord's grace and love, that he was free from trouble and fear, while the church, in general, though not so directly and personally concerned, were so full of loving interest on behalf of a brother, that they prayed without ceasing day and night on his behalf. What they asked we are not told, but what they should ask under such circumstances we may well know from our Lord's own prayer, Matthew 26:39-42, whatever they asked, in propriety must have included the thought, and the expression, "Thy will, not ours, O Lord, be done." When the angel awakened Peter, loosed his fetters, opened the strongly barred gates of the prison, and brought him forth into the street, he left him, having accomplished his mission. Peter, amazed and bewildered, could scarcely realize at first whether it was a reality or a vision, but, as he got his senses collected, he comprehended that God had wrought for him another wonderful deliverance from the hands of his enemies Herod and the Jews. But he neither went back to taunt the soldiers, nor was he filled with self-admiration and self-confidence, so as to shout his deliverance on the way, but considering the matter carefully, he concluded that his proper course would be flight to some other city, as the Lord had directed, saying, "When they shall persecute you in one city, flee to another." But as a true under-shepherd, he had too deep an interest in the Lord's people, who were so earnestly praying for him, to leave them without some explanation, so, going to the house of one of the friends of the cause, he communicated to them the fact of his release, sent word to the leaders of the cause in the city James and the brethren, and then fled to another place. This James was the brother of our Lord, while the James who had been killed was the apostle, the brother of John. The fact that James and the prominent brethren were not at the house of Mary and her son John Mark would seem to corroborate the thought that the meeting at the latter place was only one of many in Jerusalem. The narrative of Peter's knocking at the door, and the interruption of the prayer meeting, with the announcement of the answer of the prayers in the most remarkable manner, is all told with a beautiful simplicity, and indicates to us the loving spirit of fellowship and brotherhood which existed in the early church. The golden text carries a great lesson of its own in connection with Peter's deliverance. The scriptures give us clearly to understand that the angels of God are ministering spirits sent forth to minister for them who shall be heirs of salvation. Hebrews 1:14. Very seldom have they been manifested to any as in this recorded instance, yet they are present as the representatives of the Lord to do any needed work for us according to His will. But we are to understand that the angel of the Lord was with James, who was killed, as truly as with Peter, who was delivered, and that the deliverance of God's people is not always such as can be appreciated by the natural senses. Sometimes the angel of the Lord is present with us and grants sustaining strength to endure a trial from which we are not delivered. Such was our Lord's case, we read, that an angel appeared unto him and strengthened him. Such was probably the ministration of angels to James, in his time of sore distress, when his life was yielded up to a murderer. Such also have been the experiences of many. The angel of the Lord has stood with them and has strengthened where he was not authorized to deliver. It is recorded that many Christian martyrs were so upheld and blessed, that even in the midst of persecution, torture, and flames, they were able to sing praises to the Lord. It is related of Bishop Latimer, that, when bound to the stake, he said to Bishop Ridley, speaking with great equanimity respecting his own suffering, "We shall light such a candle, by God's grace, in England this day, as I trust shall never be put out again." How it enlarges the confidence of a Christian to realize that whilst earthly powers may be in opposition, and whilst he may be really of himself powerless to resist adversaries, and whilst in addition to the flesh and blood adversaries he may realize that he battles also with spiritual wickedness in exalted places against Satan and his minions of darkness, yet that, on the other hand, greater is he that is on our part than all that be against us, and that all the heavenly hosts are subject to the divine will, and may be employed for the advancement of the divine cause according to divine wisdom. R2139, Z1897, page 118, page 1.